Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with my guest host, or co-host, I should say, William Fink, a Greek expert, many years devoted to retranslating the New Testament from the original Greek. And his website is Christogenia.org for a complete new and revised translation of the entire New Testament. That's up now, isn't it, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Outstanding, outstanding. And does that include the 3 million footnotes? Or is that without?
It's without my footnotes.
Oh, okay.
And I know that's a handicap in a lot of ways because my notes lend a lot of insight into why I chose the translation method that I did and
right.
Renderings of several words. However, I'm trying to get them. My translations also published as four separate books.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And two of those are ready. And if I find a publisher, that would be nice. I don't want to lessen the value of the publication to the publisher.
Right.
But for
right.
my part, I really don't care.
Yes.
If I can't find a publisher, then I'm going to have to either publish on demand or put them online.
Right. Okay. All right. So so in the meantime, the footnotes that explain a lot of your translational decisions aren't available to those online. But I suppose if they have a question on anything they read, they can always send you an email, right?
Right. But a lot of my methods are already explained in my other essays that are online.
Mm-hmm.
Translating John 1:11-13.
Okay.
Translating Luke 16:8-9. They're pamphlets I wrote that highlight my translation notes. And I'm about to write another one on 1 Corinthians 6.
Yes. Okay. All right. Guest 6 says Lulu is a good electronic publisher. Electronic publisher. So, yeah, if you have to, you can go with them. I know several authors who've done that. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, this is part 9, I believe, of our episode, various episodes on To Seed Line. And we've been talking about Genesis chapter 10. I believe we left off with Genesis 10:3, discussing the sons of Gomer, who were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. Is that your recollection, too?
Well, we did touch on Genesis 10 and probably on a little more than that last week.
Okay.
However, I would really like to take it from the top.
Okay.
And that's because, and I'd like to talk just a little bit about archaeology, and that's because this is a very important topic, and I'd like to have it all in one place. And not
all
right. only that, but, you know, Genesis chapter 10 is highly misunderstood and very much overlooked, even by many Christian identity pastors who see nothing past the Assyrian deportations and the children of Israel.
Oh, okay.
And they don't really care about anything else. And,
yes.
And that is, and not caring about Genesis 10 and the foundation and the spreading of our race from the beginning.
Right.
Leaves one with a house built on sand.
Right. Actually, as you're saying that, I'm reminded of a discussion I had that actually was on the heels of an argument that I've had with the Judah, the Joseph Scepter people, okay? And that is, they wonder, well, where did Judah, what was Judah doing, having relations, sexual relations with Tamar, whose ancestry is questionable? And I remarked to the person, well, the reality is that all of the 12 patriarchs, Jacob's sons, all 12 of them, they had to marry non-Israelite women. Okay.
Right, absolutely. But more than that, and the Jacob Scepter, the Joseph Scepter people are the absolute worst scholars in Christian identity.
Okay.
I've read their stuff. They claim to be Greek experts. They claim to be experts in languages that don't exist anymore.
Right.
They don't know anything about Greek. I'll debate any Joseph Scepter
yes.
advocate at any time,
mm-hmm, okay.
And that's an open challenge to any of them because they're all clowns.
All right. Yes.
The Genesis chapter. All right. Another rule of thumb because you just raised it and it has
mm-hmm.
to be discussed.
Okay.
Nobody's genealogy is questionable in a Bible unless the Bible points it out.
Right. Okay. Granted.
It can be taken for granted that if and we have to put faith in our ancestors that wrote these things.
Right. Right.
Jacob accepted, and obviously, Judah's children by Tamar.
Mm-hmm.
The other Israelites, the other tribes of Israel, Yahweh accepted Judah's children by Tamar.
That's right.
So we have to.
Absolutely.
Tamar's genealogy cannot be questioned because the Bible doesn't question it.
That's right.
And the Bible does question everybody's genealogy. Whose genealogy is questionable?
Exactly. It goes out of its way to question those genealogies which are inadequate.
Absolutely.
That's probably a poor way of stating it, but certainly inadequate.
If we don't have two witnesses, we can't slander anybody.
Right.
Because if you don't have two witnesses and you're accusing somebody, it's slander.
Out of
the mouth of two or three witnesses should a matter be established.
Right. But the reason why I brought it up is simply to say that these nations in Genesis chapter 10 are all nations, at least at this point in time, from which the Israelites could have gotten wives, because they were all white people, and white wives are not denied to the patriarchs of Israel. It's plain and simple.
Right.
Yeah.
There's two key verses in the Bible.
Okay.
Acts 17:26 and Deuteronomy 32:8-9.
Okay.
These two verses set the context for the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And the word man and the history of the people of the Bible. And Deuteronomy 32:8-9 says, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam. Now, this only happened in Genesis chapter 11. You can't point anywhere else to claim this happened in Genesis chapter, except Genesis chapter 11.
Okay.
Once you realize that the people in Genesis chapter 11 are the 72 nations of Genesis chapter 10, and they were all white, that's the context of Scripture.
Right.
Period. It ends there.
Yes.
When he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. Now, Paul in Acts 17:26 is talking to Athenian Greeks. These people are not Israelites. They're Javan.
Okay.
They're from Genesis 10:2.
Right.
They're the sons of Japheth. And Paul makes an appeal to these Athenian Greeks who are Yavana or Ionians by race.
Yes.
And he talks to them about God. But he doesn't talk to them about redemption or salvation because they're not Israel.
Right.
But he says to them that Yahweh basically set free all the nations of Adam to do what they wished, hoping that they would follow him. And
right.
Yahweh knows ahead of time that they're not going to do that. But the idea is that the children of Adam have free will, and our failure is our fault and not Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. And we have the scriptures to rely upon if we choose to do so.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And Paul tells these Athenians that Yahweh made of one. Now, the word blood is not in the original Greek.
That's right.
And my translation says, and he made from one every nation of men, which means of Adam. And Paul defines the word Adam in Romans chapter 5, which we'll get to on a Saturday evening program in a few weeks.
Okay.
And the word man is defined as Adam in Romans chapter 5, and no non-Adamite can claim to be a part of that.
Right.
And he made from one every nation of men to dwell upon all the face of the earth or the land, appointing the times ordained in the boundaries of their settlements.
Right.
Exactly.
And
that also can only refer to Genesis chapter 11.
Right, and which race of people have settled the entire planet?
Right.
Only the white race.
Spread out at an early time and made settlements across the entire planet.
That's right. It's
but
the white race that has settled.
Also be just all the face of the land. I mean, the Oikoumene the ancient white world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Okay, so now, do you want to back up? Was that both points? Because you had
that's my major point as far as why it's important to understand Genesis chapter 10.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, all the archaeologists for the last 150, 200 years have understood that Mesopotamia and Syria are the cradle of Western civilization.
That's right.
That all of our study of ancient documents, archaeology actually means...
Yeah.
Originally meant the study of ancient documents. And all of our archaeology points back to Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Syria, but especially Babylonia and Sumer as the cradle, the origin of white Western civilization.
Yes.
Now,
Cattle
Hoyuk, I'd like to talk about Cattle Hoyuk for a minute and the in, the Indus River Valley for a minute.
Okay.
There is an older civilization that's being dug out of the ground in the Indus River Valley, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we descended from it.
Okay.
And it may be, there's 1,800 years between the time of Adam and Noah's flood, at least.
Right.
And we don't know exactly where those people inhabited. We don't know how many people spread out in those 1,800 years.
Yeah.
And they might be responsible for the Indus River Valley civilization.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt. But that's not where we can trace our genealogy back to. That's not where we can trace our white nations back to.
Yes.
We can trace them back to the Genesis 11 account.
Yeah, and 10, certainly. Yeah, because
right.
Genesis 10
and
11.
Chapter 10.
Yeah. These are the white nations that are descended from Noah.
Every one of them is white, and we're about to see that.
Yes.
Now, Catalhoyuk is in Anatolia.
Okay.
And Catalhoyuk is a group of ancient buildings, and they look very much, if you do a Google search on the Dogon tribe of Kenya, you find these odd mud brick buildings that are clumped together in groups that have their entrances in the roofs.
Okay.
And they go down into their dwelling from the roof. And Catalhoyuk is very similar to that.
Okay.
And not only that, Catalhoyuk, by all accounts, dates to maybe 10,000 B.C., and I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
But I would doubt that it's an Adamic city or a white civilization that dwelt there.
Okay.
In fact, African motifs, especially leopards, are found drawn all over the place.
Yes.
And I'm not going to claim to know anything about the mm-hmm. anthropology of pre-Adamic Mesopotamia.
Right.
But it's obvious that other races dwelt there.
Yes.
And who they were is beyond me, but they may have been related to the Dogons of Africa or to some other race that was in both places.
Yes, and left traditions that the Dogon have kept alive. Because I know that one of the traditions the Dogon have is that they have a tradition that the star Sirius is actually a dual star. And,
yes, I'm highly familiar with that.
And how could they have known that, some savage tribe in the heart of darkest Africa, when they find out that indeed Sirius is a dual star?
Right. They actually go as far as claiming to be from there. And
right. So,
I'm not saying that's not impossible. I mean, if you listen to Wesley Swift's tapes, you'll hear some of that.
Well, yeah, I think the issue you're raising is a possibility. If they are not Adamites who settled these dwellings, they may have been fallen angels, from Dogon, from Sirius.
Well, they actually were responsible for creating the Dogons as they are today.
Could be.
And that's conjecture, and I like to stay a little more pragmatic than that, but yes, that's a very good possibility.
Yes.
and a very good picture of what pre-Adamic civilization could have been like from what we've seen in the Book of Enoch that we've discussed earlier in this series.
Hey, Bill, the Judeo-Christians aren't pragmatic. Why should we be?
Yeah. They're just lunatics.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And I just wanted to touch on that.
Yeah.
But by all historical and archaeological accounts, our race began in Mesopotamia.
Right.
About 5,000 years ago.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, on my website, in the discussion section, I posted a paper, and I stole this PDF off the internet from this Russian archaeologist website. This Russian archaeologist, S.A. Grigoriev, he has traced what he calls the Indo-European homeland back to what we would describe as Kurdistan, which is very northern Mesopotamia.
Right.
And that's where Paddan Aram was, which is the ancient homeland of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mentioned 20-something times in the book of Genesis.
Right. That's right. Yes.
Abraham sent back and gotten his wives for Isaac and Jacob from.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And so it would have been one of these tribes, descendants of Shem, Japheth, and Ham, that would have had settled in Paddan Aram.
Well, I believe that was the land of Arphaxad.
Okay.
And we don't have any historical proof of that, but if it's the homeland of Abraham's fathers, it seems to make sense that since Abraham's forefathers were Arphaxad,
yes.
And we find Aram directly to the south in what we know is the region around Damascus in Syria, and very close by, and
yes.
Elam exactly. Just to the east in Persia,
mm-hmm.
then it makes sense that that's the land of Arphaxad.
Right, and for those people, I mean, because we're using words that people are unfamiliar with, Arphaxad fathered Selah, and Selah fathered Eber. Okay, so Arphaxad was the grandfather of the Hebrews. So,
yes.
So consequently, you know, these are relatives, folks. They're relations of the Hebrews, and of course the Israelites. So, and of course Abraham. So, you know, we're just pointing out that these people are all related to each other, and they're not, as is commonly taught, people of different races. They're all of the same white race, the Adamic race, and there's simply no doubt about this.
No doubt at all.
Yeah. Okay, now, shall we start at Genesis 10:1?
Yes. Well, let's start at Genesis 10:2 with the actual names, and,
okay,
and we could discuss each one briefly. I have Gomer highlighted here first.
Okay, go ahead.
And Gomer is very difficult to document, and as we discussed last week, the historian Josephus made the mistake of associating Gomer with the Celts or the Kimmeroi.
Yeah.
And there's some similarity in the name. However, it could be more than documented that the Kimmeroi come from the Cumri of the Assyrians, which are the deported Israelites, the
right,
relocated Israelites, and there are many Assyrian inscriptions that show this, and we could show it in prophecy and in history. So
yes.
Gomer is not to be associated with the Kimmeroi, and Joseph has made a serious error there, and many, many people have followed him since then.
Okay, an interesting comment on the screen here from Patricia. Strangely, the Hawaiians claim to be descendants of Japheth. They have cities of refuge, which is an interesting thing.
Well, you know, they may have picked up a lot of that thing from early missionaries.
Right, that's possible.
And I don't see any evidence that actually goes back before the missionary period.
Okay, okay.
And I hate to say it, but, yeah, we find a lot of that amongst the other races. And the missionaries actually taught a lot of these Oriental peoples that they were Japhethites. But that's simply impossible because Japhethites were white.
Oh, right. Oh, no doubt.
Are located, we're about to match up these tribes in history, and the proof is in my documents on my
yeah.
website, the race of Genesis 10, and there's more than enough documentation to
yeah.
show that these people are all white, and I seriously doubt if Japheth had any Oriental children or if Noah had any Oriental children.
Yeah, Patricia suggests that there may have been, like, contact across the sea. I know that the Japanese have a tradition that their ancestors were white and were Japhethites. In fact, that's where the word Jap comes from. It comes from Japheth, and there still are two tribes in the highlands of Japan that are primarily white and who claim to be descendants from Japheth. So, you know, these traditions may actually have some root in history. As we know, the Japhethites got around. They traveled far and wide.
Well, they were Scythian and Japhethite. Scythian, like Aryan tribes traveling to the east for,
mm-hmm.
for many centuries before
yes.
before the Israelite Scythians.
Exactly. Yes.
But
so,
how much of that blood actually reached the Pacific Ocean?
Unchanged. Yeah.
And there's very, very little documentation, and a lot of it's just all conjecture. And
right.
I don't like
yeah.
To assert anything that's not,
right.
that I can't document
yeah.
from actual ancient texts
yeah.
or from archaeology.
But even there, the inclination or the suggestion is that the Ainu, A-I-N-U, were white. if not today, they once were white.
Yeah, yes, they were white.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolute.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that the Japanese actually descended from them. And
right.
That maybe some of their ancestors came from white people.
Exactly.
And that's
why yes.
that every Negro in America has at least one white ancestor. Or
yeah,
one
including Obama.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. So Gomer is hard to trace, and there's been a mix-up between Cumru, which actually is the word by which the Welsh still call themselves today, the Cumru, which is, they're named after King Omri, who in one language, I believe the Assyrian language, was pronounced Gomri and spelled G-H-O-M-R-I, Gomri. And of course, the G was dropped and it became Omri. And I believe that's how the Israelites referred to him as Omri, O-M-R-I. So there's this confusion between the Gomri, who are actually Israelites, and the Gomer, who are these Japhethites? Anything else you can tell us about the real Gomer?
Well, it is Omri in the King James Version of the Bible.
Okay.
But in Hebrew, it's Homri.
Okay.
It's a very guttural H sound at the beginning of it, and the same thing with the Assyrian, which is a related language that became to the Greeks a K. That's how guttural it was.
Okay.
And that's how guttural, and that guttural sound often became a K in the Greek tongue, and that's the Kimmeroi.
Right.
Or the Kimmerians, as we
yes.
Know.
Okay.
I go Arthur Koestler. He's a Jew. He wrote that book, The 12th Tribe.
Right, 13th
he writes
tribe.
From a Jewish perspective.
Right.
But he cited a lot of early medieval documentation, and I don't know how accurate it is. However,
right.
He attributes Gomer to be the common ancestor of a lot of the later white or almost white tribes that came into Europe, such as the Avars, the Huns,
right.
The Quaker, the Basili, the Tarniaks, the Khazars.
Right, exactly.
And he connects them to Gomer from documents that are probably 1,000 years old.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Not quite old enough for me compared to a lot of the classics that I've read that
yes.
Tell me that I really can't identify Gomer.
Right, and he's just quoting the verbal tradition of the Khazars themselves when he makes these statements, too.
Right.
Yes. So it's hard to verify, very hard to verify.
Right, it's very hard to verify.
Yeah, okay. But chances are there's some truth to it, that the Huns and the Avars and, you know, maybe not the Mongols, because the Mongols are Oriental, but the Mongols mixed with the Ashkenazi to form the Khazars.
Yes, okay. And they were actually, George Moore traces the word Khazar back to the word Kush, and he makes a good argument for that in his book, The Saxons of the East and the Saxons of the West.
Oh, okay.
And he makes an excellent scholarly argument for taking the word Cossack and associating it with the word Kush and also the word Khazar.
Yes. Okay.
And Khazaria. Because the Ashkenazi dwelt in Khazaria.
Yes.
But they probably weren't the actual Khazars.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just one tribe that the Khazars had come to dominate.
Right, right. Well, certainly the Ashkenaz are older than the Khazars. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt from biblical prophecy that Togarma, Gomer,
mm-hmm.
Ashkenaz,
and
Riphath,
right.
Or Diphath, okay, that's another place. It's Riphath in the Septuagint.
Okay.
And Diphath in the King James, I believe.
Well,
where that R and that D are confused.
Right, yes. Okay.
And all of these are among the hordes from that are controlled by Gog,
mm-hmm.
come against, who are against, or the children of Israel in the end days.
Right, right. Okay, so we were discussing the descendants of Gomer here in Genesis 10:3. Ashkenaz, Riphath, this is the King James, has an R, and Togarma. Togarma is usually associated with the Turks, which would also be in, Anatolia, that is what we call Asia Minor today, or Turkey today.
Right. Now, there is a clear connection between the Uyghurs, U-I-G-U-R.
Right. Okay. Uyghurs, yes.
Of the lands near Tibet and Mongolia and the Turks.
Okay.
That there is a clear historical connection there.
Interesting.
That those Uyghurs or Uyghurs or
yes.
whatever they are, had migrated west into the Khazarian Jewish trading empire, had become amalgamated with it, but they adopted Islam instead of Judaism.
Right, right.
And around the end of the first millennium A.D., they went on their conquest of Mesopotamia and the
yes.
Greek lands of Anatolia and eventually Greece.
And became part of the Muslim horde, eventually, yes.
Right.
Interesting.
Who were opposed to Israel in the end times.
Yes, interesting. Fascinating. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 2, 10:2, because we were just talking about Gomer, and what do you have to say about Magog?
Magog, Tubal, and Meshech. Magog is definitely somewhere in north of Mesopotamia.
Yes.
And we get that from Ezekiel mostly,
mm-hmm.
and he's allied with Tubal and Meshech and Gog, who we believe is actually representative of the Amalekite, the Edomite Jew.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, all these are aligned in Ezekiel 38 against the children of Israel. Now, there's a very interesting word And it's a lot clearer in the Septuagint from the argument that I'm going to give than it is from the King James Version. But Ezekiel wrote in the Septuagint that Ross was the leader or prince of Magog, Meshech, and Tubal.
Okay.
And this is clear if you read the Septuagint version of Ezekiel 38:2, which exists long before the Masoretic version, which actually didn't come into play until about 800 or 900.
Right.
Now, Ezekiel wrote this 1,500 years before the Germanic Rus, who were actually Israelites, had gone and conquered Meshech and Tubal and came to be their rulers.
Right,
And here we have Russia and Moscow and Tobolsk. And that's modern Russia.
Yes, yes.
And Meshech and Tubal are mentioned by Herodotus as being in the far north along the Black Sea, but later we find them much further north than that. And I believe that as the Scythian-Cimmerian explosion happened, you know, as they came out of Assyria, that they probably drove a lot of tribes off because they came to inhabit that very land.
Okay, and so you already mentioned the Javan would be the Ionian Greeks, descended from Japheth. And then the Madai are who?
Well, Javan in the Persian, I'd like to just discuss this real quick. The Persian inscriptions, it's Yavanna.
Yes.
And everywhere in the Persian inscriptions we have Yavanna, it's Ionians in history.
Yes.
In the Bible, later on in the Old Testament, we see in the later prophets, we see the word Greek a couple of times. And I'm not sure exactly where it is, but the Hebrew is Yavanna.
Yes.
And it shouldn't say Greek. It should say Ionians.
Yes.
Because there are several other tribes of Greeks that are actually Israelites.
Okay.
and they have to be distinguished.
Yes. Okay.
Now, Madai is the Medes.
Yes.
And we see Madai mentioned in Isaiah in connection with the fall of Nineveh. We see Madai mentioned in the other prophets in Jeremiah. And where we see that, we see the Medes in history. And they dwelt in the far northern Iraq originally.
Yes.
And Madai is definitely the Medes. And Herodotus, the historian, he actually made the explicit statement that in ancient times, the Medes were the only people considered to be Aryans. Okay?
Okay.
He also describes the priesthood of the Magi as a priesthood amongst the Medes.
Yes.
That became a priesthood of the Medes and the Persians later on, but they originated with the Medes.
Yes, and the Medes and Persians were allied against Babylon and defeated Babylon. So you're talking about two white Aryan kingdoms allied against Babylon.
Right, and we should probably do a show on this because I could pretty much demonstrate from the classical histories that in actuality, and this is hidden from us because the Babylonians came to write history.
Okay.
The Babylonians came to write the inscriptions.
All right.
Okay?
Okay.
But it was the fall of Nineveh actually happened with an alliance of the Scythians, the Medes, and the Babylonians. And at that time, the Scythians, according to Herodotus, ruled all of Asia.
Okay. Yes.
Now, the Scythians didn't stick around, and the Babylonians wrote the history.
Right.
and I can pretty much demonstrate that, but we could probably do a whole one-hour segment simply on that.
That's white history. The white people create the civilization, leave, and the people staying behind write the history.
Well, absolutely, but the Babylonians they were not pure white, even at that late
That's
time.
Right.
Early time, they were not. They had a lot of Kenite blood in Babylonia.
Yes, absolutely.
I would never make the assertion that the Babylonians were pure white.
Yeah, and
but they were generally Caucasian.
Well, because Babylon was really begun by Nimrod, and Nimrod himself was white. He also is reported, I don't know if it says it in the Bible, but at least the myths say that he married his mother, kind of like Ham did with his mother. Oh, he didn't actually marry her. Had incest, and the incest was Canaan.
Well, I would think that the myth was probably, and this happens quite often in mythology, transferred from Ham.
Right, absolutely. Okay, and then we have Tiras, T-I-R-A-S.
Tiras, in Hebrew, if you look in Strong's Concordance, Tiras is only mentioned like twice in the whole Bible.
Okay.
And Tiras is Thrace, the original Thracians, just north of Javan in Greece. just north of Greece, you have Thrace. And it's actually T-H-I-Y-R-A-C is
uh-huh.
the way that Strong's transliterates it into English.
I see.
And
I see.
It's Thrace or Thrace.
Would that have any linguistic connection to the area of the mountains called the Tyrol, T-Y-R-A-O-L, which is, you know, those mountains just north of Italy?
I can't. I understand the Tyrol Mountains. And
mm-hmm.
we can put these people in that area, and we may do that later with
okay.
Daylag even. But I wouldn't make the link.
It's tentative.
Connection.
Okay. But it may be. It may be a real connection. Okay. All right. Very good. So Tyrus is Thrace, and all these descendants of Japheth, with the possible exception of Gomer, are actually traceable historically.
Right. And we're missing an important one is Tarshish.
Okay.
And we can't skip over Tarshish.
Okay.
Tartessus is a district in southern Spain, and it's attested to its existence before the Trojan War by Greek historians.
Yes.
They claim that Tartessus was around before the Trojan War,
okay.
and that at that time it was not known as a shipping port, but later on it was a great shipping port.
Yes.
And
allied with the Phoenicians, so-called, yes.
Right. And the accounts of the ships at Tarshish in Solomon and Hiram's time comes about 200 years after the Trojan War,
mm-hmm.
which falls in very well with the testimony of the ancient Greeks.
Yes, yes.
Now, Tartessus is the district in southern Spain that it's along the Mediterranean in the south of southern Spain. It's the closest part of Spain to
yes.
Mesopotamia.
Yes, okay,
words.
Yes. The eastern face of Spain, yes.
Right, and it's known as and the people aren't really, they're not Hebrews. Iberia is really beyond Tartessus,
mm-hmm.
the original Hebrew land.
I see.
The Phoenicians had settled beyond there, but they also made settlements along the coast.
Right.
The Phoenicians had settlements along all the coast.
Okay, so.
The Tartessians are definitely Japhethites.
Right, right. So from what you're saying, it sounds like the Tartessians were there first, but then the Spanish Peninsula became known as the Iberian Peninsula, which was settled later by the actual Hebrews of the 12 tribes, and probably even earlier by Hebrews of the Egyptian captivity, right?
Yes, that's very plausible, and that just falls in line with the prophecy that in Deuteronomy, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance,
yes.
He separated the sons of Adam. He set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel.
And it would include Spain as well.
and it also goes along with the prophecy in Genesis chapter 9 that Japheth would dwell in the tents of Shem.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so we already discussed verse 3, but let me just repeat it here. And the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, and Riphath, and Togarma. And I think we, you know, discussed the Togarma were the Uyghurs and the Turks, and Ashkenaz would be those northern, the ones who settled north of the Black Sea primarily. And
later
then,
on became the Ashkenazi Jews.
That's right.
Who were converted to Judaism, and that happened in 600 to 900 A.D.
Right, and then who would be the Riphath, R-I-P-A-T-H, or P-H-A-T-H?
I can't identify those people.
Okay,
sorry.
All right, so, yeah, those are obscure.
Except for the conjecture of the medieval people that Koestler quotes from. That's the earliest data and the latest data. I have nothing solid.
Yes. And who are they associated with by him?
With the Huns and the Avars.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And the later invaders into Germanic Europe.
Interesting. Okay, excellent. Okay, now verse 4. And the sons of Javan, or Javan, however you want to pronounce it, Elisha. And Tarshish, here's Tarshish again, Kittim and Dodanim. Okay, you want to discuss these one at a time, Elisha?
Yes, absolutely. Elisha is a name that's actually found on Cyprus.
Cyprus.
Okay, now Cyprus is a pretty big island.
You mean
okay?
Cyprus?
Yes,
Cyprus. Cyprus, okay.
It's actually in Greek, it's Cyprus.
Right.
And I mispronounce everything because...
Now, Cyprus, that's interesting. That's Latin for copper.
Yes, it's connected with the Latin word for copper.
Was copper mining taking place on Cyprus or Cyprus?
Well, it's very plausible that the Trojans when they were in Troy actually used Cyprus for a port for both a port
mm-hmm.
and a trading partner and for raw materials.
Yes.
There's actually, we have names in Cyprus that can also be found around the Troad.
Okay.
Okay, and names of mountains and rivers that can be found around the Troad.
Okay.
That the well, Cyprus, you know, Asher is a prominent figure in Cyprus, according to Ezekiel.
Okay.
Asher is getting, is in Cyprus and using and trading in Cyprus, according to Ezekiel.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so well, when his kingdom expanded, yes. Okay, because that comes
well, no,
later.
I mean the Asherites of Israel.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Not,
yeah, well, that certainly
the
came
Asher
later.
Of the Assyrians.
Okay.
Yes, and that's in an early time, and there's a great... George Rawlinson identifies a lot of Phoenician settlements on Cyprus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's there's Phoenician settlements there, and there's a lot of intercourse. I mean, our people were seagoing. And
yes, yes, and apparently the Japhethites were too, no
well,
doubt.
If you Genesis 10, Japheth is assigned the idols in the coastlands, and neither Shem nor Ham are assigned those regions.
Yes, yes. And
Genesis
that's,
chapter 10.
And
that's
from,
why we see that Japheth has settled all the coastlands from the Black Sea, all around the Black Sea. If you look at the Medes
yes.
and Meshech and Tobolsk, where they originally were, according to the Greek classicists,
yes.
they were
yeah.
around the Black Sea.
And
so
from
later
what
that they migrated up into Russia.
Right, right. And from what you're saying, they settled the eastern coast of the Mediterranean, the Dodanum as well, and
right, the Dodanum
Dionians.
That's Rhodians.
Okay.
It's Rhodanum, and that's another place where
mm-hmm.
the D and the R are confused by the ancient Hebrew scribes.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And we've seen quite a bit of that, and that can be actually demonstrated in the Septuagint. That was read as Rhodanum and the Rhodian Greeks.
Yes.
And it only makes sense that they're connected to the Ionian Greeks.
And then Tarshish is eastern Spain, facing the Mediterranean. Okay. So it's absolutely right. They settled the coasts. They settled the coast of the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea.
Right. And now Kittim is actually a word for Cyprus or Cyprus in the Hebrew prophets.
Interesting. Okay.
So we have the name Elisha was found on Cyprus. And that was actually found in inscriptions, actually, in Hittite inscriptions. And we have Kittim is the actual word in the Hebrew prophets for Cyprus.
Okay.
I mean, it's a big island, and
yes.
because we have one name for it doesn't mean that they couldn't have had several.
Surely, surely. Plus, the name changed as different invaders took over.
Right, but different versions of the name probably
yeah.
covered different parts of the island. I mean, that's conjecture, but it only makes sense.
Yes. And now it's interesting here in the next verse, by these were the isles, okay, and you're talking about, now the word isle, I don't have it in front of me, but I looked it up and it really comes from a word that means a selected place, or actually it should be settlement, in my opinion, it should be settlement, not, it doesn't mean a place of land surrounded by water necessarily, but it would have coasts, okay. And so this verifies what you're saying about the descendants of Japheth in general, that they would settle the coasts of these various seas.
They were the original Caucasian Sea.
Yes, they were the original settlers of the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. That's who they were. And, of course, north of the Black Sea would be the steppes of Russia. Okay. So let me quote verse 5. By these were the isles of the nations, and, of course, it says Gentiles. Now, I have a bone to pick here with the Jews and with the Judeo-Christians, because this word Gentile simply doesn't belong here. And the Jews define the word Gentile to mean non-Israelites. Okay? So, if these people who are related to the Hebrews, as we pointed out, they're actually cousins of the Hebrews, and therefore
right, the Hebrews
cousins.
Hebrews aren't even born yet
yeah.
at this period of time.
So this word Gentile simply doesn't belong here, because if their definition is non-Israelite, when how can you say there's a non-Israelite before the Israelites even existed? It, you know, it's ridiculous. This word does not belong here. It should be nations. Yeah, by these were the isles of the nations divided in their lands. And, of course, we're talking about the white nations of Japheth, right? Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we see that the Japhethites are Aryans.
Yes.
They can't be Orientals, as the church teaches.
That's right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. There were no Orientals in Spain or in Greece in 2000 BC.
Hey, you're kidding me. if you actually trace the migrations of these people and research them and follow the names, follow the language as it moved and these place names as they moved from Mesopotamia to the Black Sea, to the eastern coast of the Mediterranean Sea, to the western coast of the Mediterranean Sea, you're talking about white people.
Right, but from a very early time, the Romish church was trying to put over it worked to a great extent, on people, and they taught their own missionaries this and their own.
Yes.
It's part of their doctrine.
Well, yeah, because they were an empire.
The three main races, the white, the black,
right,
and the yellow, came from Shamham and Japan.
Well, not only the Catholics teach this, the Jews teach this as well.
Well, they'd love you to believe it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. They'd love us to believe it.
They're the authors of confusion.
That's right. That's right. So between the Catholic Church and the Jewish Church, we have nothing but distortion. And you can just trace from the tracing the history of these people, they were Aryan white Israelites, no doubt about it. Simply no doubt about it, okay? So anybody who tells you different, folks, they have no idea what they're talking about, and they won't be able to trace the movements of these various people as William Fink and myself are discussing right now. And they haven't got a clue about what we're talking about either, okay? So let me finish verse 5. By these were the isles, or preferably the settlements of the nations divided in their lands. We're talking about the nations of Japheth. Everyone after his tongue, after their families, folks, and in their nations, okay? So we're talking about their relatives, the places they settled down to live, and form their own countries. That's all this is saying, folks. It's not talking about new races being developed.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, whenever a group of people settles, you know, let's say a bunch of your relatives and a bunch of my relatives move down south into Alabama and Georgia, let's say, their dialect is going to change. Your New York accent is going to get catch on a southern drawl, okay?
Oh, I don't have that happen.
And my Chicago accent, of course, there's no such thing as a Chicago accent. It's gonna develop a different kind of southern drawl in Georgia than it will from Alabama or Tennessee or Texas. That's just the way it works, okay? And that's after his tongue. That's all it means. Their dialects changed. They were still speaking Hebrew.
Well, or the progenitor to Hebrew. It was probably a common progenitor to Hebrew and Sanskrit and Aramaic, which are all very, and Akkadian. They're all very closely related languages, but they all have differences.
Yes, and usually in this stage of the game, at this point in history, the differences are not that great, because when Abraham sent to Paddan Aram for a daughter for his son Isaac,
definitely understood, right?
Yes, he was definitely understood. They had no problem understanding each other, of course, until after the Tower of Babel incident, okay? And we're going to get to that, because the next person we're going to talk about is Ham, okay? Verse 6, and the sons of Ham, Cush, and Mizraim, and Put, and Canaan. So just briefly, I know we talked about it last time, but just briefly give us the account of the eastern and western Cush.
Okay. In Hebrew, there's two Cushes. It's evident that there's two Cushes because Ethiopia, in an African context, in the prophets, such as Jeremiah, can an Ethiopian change his skin?
Right.
That word is Cush.
Yes.
But also, in Moses' time, Moses went to Cush or Ethiopia. Wherever we see the word Ethiopia in the Old Testament, the Hebrew word is Cush.
Yeah.
There's two Cushes. And that explains how Moses did not go south of Egypt to find a wife.
Right.
His wife was actually, by race, a Midianite.
Right.
The Midianites are descendants of Midian.
Mm-hmm.
Midian is in Genesis chapter 25. Is a son of Abraham by Keturah.
Right.
And Abraham knew that his children by Keturah had no share in the inheritance with Jacob.
That's
so
right.
So he sent them off, according to the biblical account, to the east country.
Yeah.
So he couldn't have sent them south of Egypt.
Right.
And we find Jethro, the Midianite, and we find many other accounts of Midianites in Arabia and in the land of Canaan in the time of Moses.
Right. Yeah.
So
yes.
Moses went to the land of Cush. So what was the land of Cush? Well, the Greeks wrote of two Ethiopias. One Ethiopia was below Egypt in Africa, but the other one, Herodotus and many other Greek writers call the Ethiopia of the East.
Mm-hmm.
And that's explicitly mentioned several times by Herodotus.
Yes.
The Ethiopia of the East.
Which means there has to be an Ethiopia of the West.
Right, and that's the Ethiopia below Egypt.
Yes.
But the Ethiopia of the East, the only, and that's called Cush in the Hebrew Bible because that's where Moses
right.
went, and it's called Cush. And it's also called Cush in Genesis chapter 1,
yes.
where we have the four rivers.
Yes.
And coming
and it's
out
also
the,
known as the Hindu Kush.
Right.
Yes.
And we have the Hindu Kush Mountains along
yes.
the Indus River in modern-day
mm-hmm.
Pakistan who attest to this.
Yes.
And in the Greek writings, we have a play called the Ethiopis, an ancient poem called
right.
Ethiopis.
Okay. Let me just make a really quick point here. If Kush is falsely interpreted as meaning black people, what was the black Empire of the Hindu Kush? Was there ever such a thing?
Never such a thing.
Never such
they
a
were
thing.
Always, they were always Aryan people.
That's right.
Or well, today they're black because they mixed with Dravidians.
Yeah, right. They got
they
black
mixed
skin.
With the Dravidians of
oh, no,
India.
You just spoiled my argument.
But they're not black as the Africans
right.
are black.
They're certainly not Africanus, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
They have straight hair and they have
they have Aryan features with dark skin.
Yes.
Okay. But they were white. They were pure white in those days, folks. So you got my word for it.
Absolutely. There's all sorts of attestations to the whiteness of the Indians and the
Absolutely.
And the
yes.
other peoples of that area.
Okay, so Kush. Now let's talk about the Kush in the West, because the fact is that the Hamites did move to, and the next word is Mizraim, in this King James Version that I have. In other translations, it says Egypt in
yes.
the place of
everywhere
Mizraim.
Everywhere the King James Version and other versions of the Old Testament say Egypt, the Hebrew word is Mizraim.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And ancient Egypt was only, or ancient Mizraim, was only the land along the banks of the Nile.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Greek world, in the Greek view of geography, the Nile was the boundary line between Asia and Libya.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have Africa in their vocabulary.
Right.
The Hebrews and
of course
the Romans,
not.
The Hebrews and the Romans did.
Mm-hmm.
But the Greeks did not have the word Africa in their vocabulary.
Okay. Okay.
And we'll discuss that when we get to Ophir.
Right.
Ophir.
Okay.
Well,
so,
the Nile was seen as the boundary between Asia and Libya.
Yes.
Because there was Egypt, which was along the Nile, and that was the boundary. And,
yes.
And everything west of Egypt was called Libya.
Yes.
And everything east of Egypt was considered part of Asia.
Right. And so Kush also is translated as Ethiopia, by which most people think of that southern Ethiopia next to, or to the south of Egypt.
Right. But the original Kush was definitely this empire founded by Nimrod,
right.
the son of Kush,
right.
which was known by archaeologists today as the first Babylonian Empire.
Right, right. Okay.
Those people, according to my own conjecture, because I can't document it,
mm-hmm.
those people left by sea, crossed the Persian Gulf,
mm-hmm.
and settled a colony on the east coast of Africa,
right.
which also became known as Kush.
Right.
I mean, that only makes sense to me because it's such a short trip
right.
by boat.
Yes.
And it's silly to think that the two Kushes could be disrelated.
Yes. Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah, it's ridiculous to think they're not related. Yeah. Yeah, and all historians know they are. There's simply no doubt about that. Okay. And Put, P-H-U-T, in the King James Version, it's spelled with an H, or Foot.
Yes, Foot cannot be located
mm-hmm.
in any specific geographical region. But Foot is definitely associated in the prophets with the Mizraim, and I'm talking about later times.
Yes.
I'm not talking about Genesis 10 times. I'm talking about 2,500 years later. Foot is associated with Mizraim and the mixed multitudes in Africa.
Okay.
Okay? And that's clear in the prophets.
Right. Okay, so they probably migrated further south and then mixed with possibly Africans too.
Well, we have all kinds of black tribes to the south of Egypt and to the
mm-hmm.
east, to right. the west of the Ethiopia in Africa.
Right.
We have all kinds of black tribes.
Yeah.
That the Nubians are the most prominent of them, and they were mixing in an early time, and that's we see that all over the Egyptian monuments. We,
right. And
we
in
see
those
black
days,
slaves
yes.
in the earliest times.
In those days, the Sahara. Was not as large. The Sahara, the southern boundary of the Sahara, was further north, and that land was much more habitable at the time than
and
it is
there
now.
There are actually riverbeds through the Sahara that are dried up.
Mm-hmm.
It was once a very fertile land.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Now Canaan. Now we discussed Canaan with regard to chapter 9 because we documented, thoroughly documented. That he was the product of incest between Ham and his own mother, okay? So, what happened with Canaan? Now, Canaan is the son of Ham and Noah's wife.
Well, Canaan is excoriated. He is
yes.
the son of incest, and he's simply excoriated.
Yes. Now, what about the location? Because we know that Canaan land was named after, you know, the land of the Canaanites is named after Canaan. Any indication that he moved directly from Mesopotamia to what's today known as Palestine?
Well, we have Canaan's two sons. The two sons that are mentioned by name are Heth and Sidon.
Okay.
The other peoples that are grouped here, there's no sons that are mentioned
mm-hmm.
by name to be a progenitor of those peoples.
Right.
And it's my opinion that those are actually pre-Adamic tribes that Sidon and Heth mingled with.
Okay.
And their descendants mingled with.
Right.
I can't prove that.
Well,
but
what you're saying is right on the money because these are the Heth was the Hittites and Sidon is the Sidonians.
Right. And the others are just tribal names.
Yes. And
now,
so these are the descendants of Canaan that probably, you know, there's a lot of white in there and probably a lot of Canaanite, or as we would call them today, the Kenites. That the Hittites and the Sidonians were mixed breed people.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And they were considered bastards throughout. And
right.
Throughout the Hebrew Bible, they were castigated.
Yes.
They
were never part of Israel. They were never considered part of Israel.
Never.
Yes.
Now,
oh.
Heth, the Hittites have a city. The capital city, the historical capital city of the Hittites is Carchemish.
Okay.
And Carchemish can be broken down. If you look in Strong's Concordance, wherever it says Ham, okay,
mm-hmm.
the actual Hebrew word is Cam.
Okay,
C-H-A-M is the way Strong spells it.
Right.
Car is a Hebrew word which means city.
Okay.
Okay, Carthage comes from two Hebrew words which mean new city.
Yes.
Amongst the Hebrews of Britain, we have the word care. C-A-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same Hebrew word.
Okay.
And that came from the Hebrew Phoenician settlers of Britain.
Yes. Okay. Care Troy means new Troy. Yes.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of cares in
yes.
ancient Britain.
Okay.
Now, car is city. Chem is ham. Ish is people.
Mm-hmm.
Carchemish was the capital city of the Hittites for 1,000 years.
Right, right. Okay.
Sidon is Canaan's other son,
mm-hmm.
and Sidon is the famous seaport which the Israelites later took over.
Yes.
However, they did not eject all the Canaanites from it, as the book of Judges and the books of Judges and Joshua tell us.
Yeah.
There were no Canaanites after the Israelite takeover of Palestine. There were no Canaanites left in Tyre, but there were many. There were Canaanites left in Sidon. Now,
mm-hmm.
eventually, they were dwindled in numbers, and they were enslaved by Solomon. However, they were there. And,
mm-hmm.
and they probably went as slaves or as merchants wherever the Phoenicians went. However, the most, and the ancients attest to this, Herodotus and Strabo attest to this explicitly,
okay.
that the Hebrew colonizing city was Tyre.
Okay.
That all of the Hebrew colonies, the Phoenician colonies of the West came out of Tyre,
okay.
not out of Sidon.
Right.
When
right.
Tyre was built, and Josephus tells us that the city in the form that, that we know it from history was built 240 years before the temple
was
built. And that's right smack in the middle of the Judges period of Israel.
Right.
And that was a completely Israelite city at that time.
Yeah, and both neither David nor Solomon had any problem with the king of Tyre during the great construction days, you know, when the temple was being built, and they hired Tyrians to help build the temple in Jerusalem.
And there's many statements in the Bible that show that that was an Israelite city, and it probably had a king because men were wont to become tyrants. I mean, tyranny was popular in those days, and the island city, which was built 240 years before the temple, is actually outside of the technical boundaries of the land of Israel.
Right, because it was in the sea, not too many miles, what, 15 miles at the most, something like that?
No, it not was actually in the sea about 200-300 yards.
Oh, really? Is that all?
Yes, it wasn't far. Alexander built a rampart out to it.
Oh, right,
When the Assyrians and the Babylonians had taken the mainland city and destroyed it, the Canaanites that were left never cleaned it up, which is typical, and they never rebuilt it. And Alexander took the rubble and filled in a rampart out to the sea a couple of hundred years later to defeat the island city.
So it was just a wade in the water?
Basically, yes.
Yes. Now, verse 7 here, because a lot of people falsely believe that the Queen of Sheba was a black woman. Absolutely not, folks. Verse 7, and the sons of Cush, Sheba, and Havilah, and Sabta, and Raamah, and Sabteca, and the sons of Raamah, Sheba, and Dedan. So Sheba, the Queen of Sheba, folks, was a white woman descended from Cush.
Absolutely. Sheba has been identified by archaeologists, and it's not an absolute 100% positive identification, but it seems to be the correct identification as being in the mountains of what today is called Yemen.
Okay.
On the south of the Arabian Peninsula.
Very good.
And there was actually a lot of archaeology found that there was an advanced culture there at one time, and that it was almost certainly a white culture.
Yes. Again, in those days, the territory was much more lush. There was actually rainfall in those areas. Sahara Desert was not as big, et cetera, et cetera.
Any casual reader of National Geographic magazine would know that there are and they've been covered many times, there are these stone carvings found in the middle of the Sahara Desert.
Yes.
And these stone carvings are in the ground, and they contain grazing giraffes and all sorts of flora and fauna, and it looks almost as if whoever made this carving was actually looking at this scene when he made the carving.
Right.
And we're in the middle of the desert here, and all of a sudden there's this carving of this beautiful, lush scene with all these animals and plants, and it's a clear indication that that land was very lush at one time.
Right, well, like the statues on Easter Island that are buried up to their necks. And you have to dig down to get to the bottom of the statue,
The Hebrews were shepherds, and they have all these flocks in Egypt. And I mean, 2 million people probably. If the numbers in of the censuses in the Book of Numbers came out of Egypt, and they were only the Hebrews, and that wasn't even all of them, because a lot of them it's documented had already left by sea.
Right.
And it's clear that the land of Egypt could support millions of people.
Yes.
On animal husbandry at that time.
Yeah, it was more
and
fertile than it is today.
Today it doesn't support anybody.
Right, hardly anybody, yes. Not compared to those days, yes.
Right, they import most of their food.
Yes. Okay, and so Havilah and Sabta are names we come up more often. That's actually, where are Havilah and Sabta?
I can't tell you for sure where Havilah, they're associated with the east, but it's not clear to me.
If we're talking about the eastern Cush, then, you know, because when the Israelites were deported, they were deported to one of the lands they were deported to was Havilah.
Right, but I don't know exactly where it is.
Yes, okay.
You know, and the Israelites or the Saka or the Scythians, whatever name you want to call them by, they're actually not only in the cities of the Medes.
Mm-hmm.
They're spread out throughout northern Persia and all of the frontier lands.
Yes.
And several tribes of Scythians came out of these people later on.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them ended up migrating towards the west, towards Europe.
Right.
But not all of them. And one tribe that stayed behind, and one of the most prominent, is the Parthians.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Who are definitely Israelites of the dispersed. Yes. Okay.
Right. Well, Havilah and Sabta can be identified with the East. I've seen conjectures on, on locations as far east as India, Afghanistan, the Persian Gulf region. But I couldn't point to any area on a map and say
So chances are Havilah and Sabta are the Kush of the East, okay? And then Ra'ama. What about Ra'ama and Sabteca? Sabteca could be similar to the Sabbateans, okay, which were south of Judah. The Sabbateans would be that rocky hill country.
You mean the Nabataeans.
They were called that, but there's a relationship between Sabteca and the Nabataeans. You're right, it's Nabataeans.
Well, there may be, but the Nabataeans, they can actually probably be associated, and they're probably the only Arab group that have a legitimate claim with Nabaioth, the son of Ishmael.
Okay.
And that he's mentioned in Genesis.
Ah, interesting. Okay. All right, so any other thoughts about Ra'ama and Sabteca?
No, they're obscure to me.
Okay. But then it says then the sons of Ra'ama, Sheba and Dedan.
Yes, and Sheba and Dedan, they're popular cities in the prophecies.
Yes.
And they're amongst the Arab cities of today. I mean, they're in what we would consider modern day Georgia.
Yes.
Jordan.
Yes. Jordan, Dedan. Okay. Very good. All right. Now, verse 8, and Cush fathered Nimrod. Now we're getting to some, you're getting close to the Tower of Babel here. And Cush fathered Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, a lot of people, this translation assumed that before the Lord means he was good or, you know, proper before the Lord, but it doesn't say any really such thing. It just says he was a mighty hunter, okay? Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord. What is this saying here?
Well, it's saying a mighty hunter is seen as a mighty man of conquest.
Mm-hmm.
And we need weapons to hunt, and the same people that hunt are the cannon fodder in all of our armies today.
Yes, yes. So he's a warrior. That's basically what we're saying here. He's a warrior.
Yeah,
he was a warrior king.
And because of his ability as a warrior, he came to rule over, he came to usurp authority over his brethren.
Mm-hmm.
And Cush is the first Adamic emperor.
Okay.
There's no doubt. He actually went out and conquered cities and forced them into his rule.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, in verse 10 it says, it gives us the names of some of the kingdoms that he conquered. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calneh, and the land of Shinar.
Yes, and it very well seems that these even though Akkad is actually an Assyrian city later on, and the Assyrian language is known as Akkadian,
yes,
that doesn't mean that they may not have inherited that name.
That's right.
That city may not have been there. Been
yes.
there before.
Yes.
And archaeology tells us that many of those cities are older than the time frame that we could put Noah's flood in, especially Babel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which actually is a word that it's a Hebrew word that means confusion.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so and I understand the land of Shinar simply to be another word for Mesopotamia, possibly maybe the middle or central portion of it, or south central portion of it, opposed to the northern portion.
Mesopotamia is the literal translation of it is amidst the rivers.
Or between the two rivers, yes.
Well, yes. And Shinar is country of two rivers.
Right.
Basically in ancient Hebrew, it's Strong's number 8152.
So it's basically a reference to the same territory, but maybe not exactly. Hard to pinpoint.
Well,
yes
but Akkad and Calneh and Erech and Babel. Akkad and Babel, we know, are in Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We know they're historical cities, Babylon and Akkad.
Question on the screen, did Esau kill Nimrod?
Well, that's conjecture, and Esau lived probably about 1800 BC, and Nimrod lived, probably about 3000 BC, so I don't think Esau killed Nimrod.
Okay, although maybe a descendant, maybe it's similar to the story of Cain, when one of his descendants wound up killing Cain. It could have been a similar situation here.
Right, but that, you know, that, the Masoretic chronology, which compresses everything.
Yeah.
And anybody could go to emmaheiser.christogenia.org and go to the chronology section. It's right on the main menu bar, and compare the Masoretic chronology to the Septuagint chronology. And with the Masoretic chronology, that tale is plausible.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
But it's not plausible with the Septuagint chronology.
Okay.
However,
okay,
with the Masoretic chronology, history and archaeology are not plausible.
Okay.
And with the Septuagint chronology, everything falls right into place.
It's better, yes. Okay. Okay. All right. So then, let's see, Nimrod, and okay, so Akkad and Shinar. What about Calneh? Any associations with Calneh and also Erech?
I don't have. Calneh is supposedly means fortress of Anu, and Anu is a Babylonian god.
Okay.
And it's definitely a city in Babylonia, but
yes,
I can't really put my finger on it. It's conjectured that it's an Assyrian city near Aleppo, which is in eastern Syria.
Yeah. All right. So this is definitely documenting the kingdom established by Nimrod, Babel and Calneh, which is city of Anu. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Anu in the Akkadian means father, or Anu means father. So they had a different father besides Yahweh. There's no doubt about that. Whatever gods they worshipped, it wasn't Yahweh.
Well, correct. There was an early paganism there that probably pre-existed.
Probably
coming at the regeneration of our race in the area.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right, very good. Now, verse 11, out of that land went forth Asher and built Nineveh, and the city of Rehoboth and Calah. Okay, so Asher is obviously the Assyrians.
Yes, Asher is the Assyrians. They're Aryan people. They're called Shemitic because of their language by all of today's academics and philologists.
Pseudo-historians.
And theologians. right. The mainstream academics have it all wrong.
Yeah.
The Assyrians are definitely an Aryan people.
Yes.
And they definitely have a Hittite element among them in all their inscriptions.
Right, right.
Okay, but early Mesopotamian and early Akkadian poetry talks about people with eyes like lapis lazuli. They're blue-eyed people.
Yes.
And there's no doubt that these people aren't white, except in the minds of all minds of today's academics that want to uphold the Jewish lie.
That's right.
The Jewish lie about who they are.
Right.
The Jewish lie about who they are perverts all of our history and all of our academia and all of our interpretations of archaeology and anthropology.
Yes. And even in later days, in the days of Jonah, Nineveh was actually a very white city.
Absolutely.
But they weren't all Israelites. There were many Israelites living in Nineveh at the time, but most of them were Assyrians. They were white Assyrians.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And they're definitely Adamic people.
Right.
All of our ancient literature proves it.
Any association?
Akkadian was actually the lingua franca for a long time, and that's why the Greeks called the first Scythians Cimmerians, because they called them after the Akkadian tongue.
Yes.
And then later on, when the Persians rose to power, the Greeks learned the word Saka, or Sakans, and that's after the Persian name for them.
Right.
But on all of the ancient Mesopotamian inscriptions, which were bilingual or trilingual in a lot of cases, where you see the word Cumri in Assyrian, you see the word Saka in Persian.
Right.
And the two words are definitely equated, and from that we know that the Cimmerians are nothing but Scythians who were the deported Israelites.
Right. So the Scythians, the Israelites, the Sake, or the Isaac's sons, and the Amri, the people of Amri, are all the same people.
Right.
Different words for the same people.
But that's 700 BC, and right now we're trying to be in 2000 BC.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And now, and so we have these other cities, Rehoboth and Calah and Rezin, or Rezin, E-R-S-E-N, between Nineveh and Calah.
Right, and it can only be conjectured where they are. I don't think there's any positive identifications of any of them.
Yeah, but everything that we were talking about archaeology, geology, and history, you know, bear these things out, that these places were really existing, and these genealogies were being given here in Genesis chapter 10 are trustworthy. We just haven't figured all this out yet, but everything that we have figured out fits what Genesis chapter 10 is telling us.
Absolutely. Well, we dig up a lot of old cities, and we
yeah.
don't know what city they are.
That's right.
And there's dozens of cities like that in Mesopotamia, maybe even dozens of dozens.
Yeah,
and even when Sir Henry Layard thought he found Nineveh, we found out later that it wasn't really Nineveh, it was another Assyrian city.
Right, exactly. 2,000 years from now, when they dig up Chicago, they'll see the Sears Tower sticking out through the sand.
Well, right.
And they'll wonder what the name of it was.
They'll call it Sears.
Yeah, right. There you go.
The strip mall.
Yeah, exactly. Sears, yeah. Okay. All right, so verse 13. Now we're getting back to some Hebrew names here. And Mizraim fathered Ludim and Anamim and Lehabim and Naphtuhim. Any associations in verse 13?
Well, Mizraim is Egypt.
Yes.
Ludim is mentioned quite often later on in the scriptures. And there's actually another Lud, the Semitic Lud, that's only mentioned twice that I'd like to discuss.
Okay.
But this Ludim is very often mentioned in the prophets.
Okay.
And he's mentioned with the Anamim, Lehabim. They're all mentioned together. And the Anamim are actually, they're mentioned in an 8th century B.C. cuneiform inscription.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably live on the upper coast of Egypt.
Okay.
And they're found in, and that word is found in Egypt, and it helps confirm this account.
Interesting. Okay.
Naphtuhim is apparently an Egyptian word which actually means people of the Delta.
Ah, okay.
And Pathrusim means people of the southern land.
Ah, okay.
So these words have meanings that indicate where they are in Egypt.
Right, right.
Okay. Now the Philistim.
Yes.
Okay, they're the Philistines.
Yes.
And the Bible says they dwelt in the land of Cathdor.
Uh-huh,
before
yes.
their migration to Palestine.
Right, exactly.
And you could see Deuteronomy 2:23 and Amos 9:7 and Jeremiah 47:4.
Mm-hmm.
And Cathdor was very probably in Egypt, but we don't know where.
Yes.
There's a lot of ancient conjecture about where Cathdor could have been. And some people, through a chance similarity in the name, say, oh, it was in Cappadocia.
Right.
That's the opposite direction from
exactly.
where Mizraim was.
Well, we're focusing on Egypt here. Clearly, Mizraim is Egypt. So we're
yes.
talking about sections of Egypt. That's what we're
yes.
talking about here.
And,
yes.
And most of these words are definitely identified with sections
right.
of Egypt.
Right. Now, verse 15, and Canaan fathered Sidon and his firstborn and Heth. Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth. The question I have for you is there any, and I briefly touched on it earlier, any indication that Canaan ever moved to Egypt with his brothers, or did he go straight to what's now called Philistim?
Well, it seems to be from the book of Jasher that Canaan refused to go into his inheritance
right.
in the south.
Okay.
That might be dismissed as a myth, but we have all the rest of the Hamites in Mesopotamia or in Egypt, and Canaan is the only one that went kind of west and
right.
in land, which appears to be that it should belong not to Ham, but to Shem.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, in other words, Canaan moved into the promised land before Shem could get there.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I figured. That's how I read this. And because he fathered Sidon, and so Sidonia would be named after Sidon.
Yes.
And Heth, the land of the Hittites, named after Heth.
Yes.
And these would have to be because all of history tells us that these were mixed-race people. They were not Israelites. They were not Hebrews.
Right. And the Hittites actually grew to a pretty great empire.
Yes.
It was destroyed by a series of earthquakes and diseases and wars and right around the time of the Exodus.
Mm-hmm. And then later on in the days of Isaac and Rebekah, both Isaac and Rebekah told Jacob not to marry the daughters of Heth because they were not related to them.
Absolutely. Rebecca said, my heart is troubled for the daughters of Heth.
Right. So the Sidonians and the Hittites are definitely a non-Israelite people, And what we're being told here is that Canaan fathered them. It doesn't say who Canaan's wife was or wives were, but we can gather from what's, you know, the following history and the fact that these people were not considered relatives of the Shemites, that they are the Hamites, that they were in fact mixed race people and are later on lumped together in Genesis 15 with the Kenites.
Now it seems to be, and let's get on to Genesis 16:17,
okay.
The Jebusite. We
yes.
find them in Jerusalem. David takes Jerusalem off them.
Later. Yes, yes.
The Amorite are the Amuru of archaeology and history.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have primarily dwelt in holes in the ground
right.
in modern-day eastern Turkey.
Yes.
Okay, so they dwelt in a land that which was close to Carchemish, which is the city of the people of Ham,
right,
and the Hittites.
Right.
We find the Amuru in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
the Girgashites are in the land of Canaan, and we know that from Genesis chapter 15.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
the Hivites of Genesis 10:17 here. The Hivite appears to be a scribal error, which actually happens quite often.
Yes.
For Horites.
Okay.
Okay, and there are a couple of places in the scripture explicitly where it can be shown that Hivites are confused for Horites.
Ah, okay.
And it seems to be that everywhere you see Hivite, it should probably say Horite.
Okay.
And the Horites actually dwelt in Mount Seir in the land of Edom.
Yes.
And that's where Esau went. And
right.
he mingled in with those people.
Yes.
So not only did he take Canaanite wives, but he dwelt amongst the Horites who were Canaanites.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, and here I'm looking at the, this is the translation by Lamsa, which is from the Aramaic text, and he uses the Havite, H-A-V, and the Arkite, and the Sinite. So he's talking about, you know, these seem to be more territorial words, Havite, Arkite, and Sinite.
Lamsa he's good for a couple of things because he does explain a couple of Hebrew idioms with a fair amount of detail.
Yes.
However, his use of those manuscripts are a lot later than
right. Oh, yeah.
what they're esteemed to be.
Right.
He claims that the New Testament was translated from Aramaic, and that's a straight-out lie.
Okay.
the entire New Testament was originally written in Greek.
Right, right.
Now, the Aramaic New Testament manuscripts don't date back before about the 5th century A.D.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they're not older than 500 or 600 A.D., the Aramaic. There's no yeah. Aramaic. There are no original Aramaic New Testament manuscripts.
Right, right.
How old the Aramaic Old Testament manuscripts are is open to question.
Mm-hmm.
There are Aramaic Targums that have been preserved.
Yes.
But I don't think that's Lamb's source. I'm not positive.
Right, right.
He makes a lot of wild claims about Scripture that just aren't true.
Right. The reason I brought it up, though, is, you know, I'm going to quickly jump to Genesis 15, 19 through 21, because we're given the list of the Kenite nations, also known as the Kenite nations, and these are those 10 nations, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, Perizzites, and the Rephaims, who we know to be fallen angels, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. So what we're talking about here is those nations which Yahweh told Abraham must be destroyed and displaced by the Israelites, are already being mentioned here as related to Canaan. Okay.
Right. And what we have here is that we have the Rephaim of the fallen angels.
Yes.
And that can be demonstrated. They're the sons of the giant. The
yes,
children
right.
of the giant. Now, the Kenites, the Kadmonites, and the Kenizzites have no genealogy with Adam.
Right.
They're not mentioned in Genesis chapter 10. The Kenites are definitely the descendants of Cain.
Yes.
And the other people, who knows where they came from?
Right, right.
And they're most likely a pre-Adamic race.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, I see we only have about 5 minutes left. Let me see. I think we left off with verse 16, and again, similarities between this and Lamsa. Verse 17: the Hivite and the Arkite and the Sinite and the Arvadite and the Zemarite and the Hamathite, and afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread around. So all of these families that we just mentioned here are related to the Canaanites, and the Canaanites from this point forward in the Bible cannot possibly be construed as Aryan Shemites or Aryan Hamites or Aryan Japhethites.
They were definitely set apart, and,
yes.
and they were excoriated. They were a distinct people. They didn't dwell amongst the Hamites.
Right.
They were pushed away from the rest of their own kin.
Yes.
And they went and lived in lands that were really Shemitic lands. I mean, Damascus and the area attributed to Aram.
Right.
We have Aramaeans who, Aram is a brother of Arphaxad and a son of Shem,
mm-hmm.
who have been dwelling in that land for, I mean, it's indubitable that isn't Shemitic land, that land didn't belong to Shem.
Right.
And
right.
Abraham's homeland just to the north of there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, the land of Canaan itself wasn't or may not have been Shemitic, but we have testimony in the book of Jasher that the Canaanites refused to go south with their brethren.
Okay.
To go to Egypt with their brethren, that they took land that really wasn't theirs.
Right. It's somehow saying that they moved in before the Shemites had the chance to do so. They took the land of milk and honey before the Israelites could get there. Okay.
Well, that seems to be the case, yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then verse 19, because this is the last verse dealing with the Canaanites, and the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, which we've already discussed, as you come to Gerar, to Gaza, as you go to Sodom and Gomorrah and Adma and Zeboim and even to Lasha. So what we're talking about, the Canaanites settled these areas which were known for their evil.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and Abraham was sent into a land of
evil people.
Sent into the pits of hell,
that's
basically.
That's right, that's right. And then there's a reason why Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, because they were a non-Israelite people practicing evil Canaanite and pagan rituals, and
yeah,
homosexual and what have you.
On the other hand, I have to say that at the time Abraham was sent where he was, it was a time where the land that he came from was on the precipice of war and the rise of the Mitanni kingdom,
right.
the clash between the Mitanni and the Hittites, and there was all kinds of things going on, and I think that he was sent to the land of Canaan to escape that.
Right, right, right. Okay, yeah, and so, okay, so let's pick this up next time, because verse 20 begins with the sons of Ham. And,
the sons of Shem. We have to...
Oh, I'm sorry, verse 20, these are the sons of Ham after their families, after their tongues and their country. That's a concluding statement, not a beginning
yes.
statement. Sorry.
The sons of Shem, it's also important to see where some of them, who they are and
right.
where they went.
So verse 21 begins with Shem and the Shemites, and we'll pick that story up next Friday night, folks. And I hope we're giving you an indication that the Bible can be understood. It's not mythology. The stuff coming out of the Judean Christian pulpits does not deal with these subjects at all, and they shy away from archaeology, except where they can probably say that, see, the Jews are Israel.
Absolutely. It's very important to understand that Genesis 10, you know, I can't testify to the historicity of the first 9 chapters of Genesis.
Right.
I mean, we have to take that on faith and on what we see in the actual creation as far as Genesis 1 is concerned,
yes.
and the distinction of the white race as compared to the others, and there's things that can be seen, but there's no historical documents.
Right.
And Genesis chapter 10, history, our civilization, and the Bible meet.
Yes, yes. It all begins, archaeology and historiography begin with Genesis chapter 10. There's simply no doubt, as I read history, this is post Noah's flood, okay, and the white Aryan nations spread out from Mesopotamia, right where you can say it's western Turkey, okay, a little bit east of that is Padanaram, okay, that's where our people came from. There's simply no doubt about it, and they spread south, west, and north, and possibly a little bit east from there, but east from there is a mountain range, you know, which is called the Hindu Kush, and penetrating into that is extremely difficult, okay? And so they went south into India, but not into the Himalayas, because although they did, some of them did, but they didn't, not enough of them to establish nations like the nations we're talking about.
And there's a wealth of archaeological data to show that the original Assyrians, the original Medes and Persians and, and the original Egyptians.
Yes.
The original Egyptians had clear Aryan features, blue
That's right.
eyes, white skin, red
Right.
hair, blonde hair,
Yes.
Brown hair.
Yes.
But they were absolutely a white people. The Egyptians had much intercourse with Southern Europe at an early time, with the Greeks. They had ports of call in Thrace
Yes.
and in Greece
Yes.
and along the banks of modern day Turkey. And they were we don't find black or Arab people in those places at those times.
Right, right. And certainly the Arabs
blacking of Egypt happened much later.
Yeah, and certainly the Arabs didn't speak Greek or Egyptian.
They aren't very good sailors. Well,
right, they never have been known as sailors. Right, right. And then that Hamito-Semitic language, which is attributed to the Egyptians, is in fact Hebrew, or if you want to call it Proto-Hebrew. But obviously Ham and Shem, being brothers, had to speak the same language in the household they grew up in.
Well, yes, the languages are definitely related.
Yes. Otherwise, you know, when Joseph was taken as prisoner down into Egypt, he was able to converse with those people with no problem because they were speaking different dialects of the same language. All right. So, yeah, let's continue. We'll get into Shem, our ancestor Shem, and Eber, and the rest and the beginning of the line of descent of the Hebrew kings, the Davidic kings, etc. And we'll be talking about the Hebrews next Friday night, folks. So stay tuned. This is getting more interesting and more historical as we progress. All right? Thank you, Bill Fink.
Absolutely. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. God bless everybody. And check with us again next Friday night. Tomorrow we're going to be repeating the same subject we had last Saturday night on Yahweh's Covenant People, because that show was not recorded. So we're going to continue with Romans chapter 2 instead of going on to Romans chapter 3. We're just going to consider last Saturday a dress rehearsal, and we're going to do it all again tomorrow night on Yahweh's Covenant People. So thanks for listening. Hope to talk with you again tomorrow night. And then Sunday, my guest will be Pastor George Udvari. We're going to be discussing the no Satan proposition that some people hold to, even in identity, that there is no literal Satan. And so we'll be debunking that myth on Sunday with Pastor George Udvari. So thanks for listening this evening. This is fun, folks. It's getting better all the time. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.